The Football Pod with Paddy and Andy, our new weekly Gaelic football show.
Lads, it's official, right? No GAA player was practicing tackling at all during lockdown. They were practicing that dummy bounce.
Download the OTB Sports app and subscribe to the GAA podcast feed now.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome along to Thursday night's Off the Ball. It's Richie McCormack here with you right through until 10 o'clock tonight. And a busy show on the way. We'll speak to the interesting character and the interesting story that is Tadhg Leaders. He has swapped Connacht rugby for American football. We'll touch base with him on his journey through life in the States up after 8 o'clock. Busy show on the way as well in terms of football. We'll look back on last night's Europa League final with Manchester United succumbing to a penalty shootout defeat, albeit a lengthy one, to Villarreal in Gdansk. John Giles will join us on the line as ever after 7:30 to discuss the fallout from that particular game and what's next for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. Also, in the football show tonight, we'll have Nicky Bandini looking at events from Italy, where maybe Solskjaer isn't on the move, but the managerial merry-go-round over there is certainly turning at pace, with Antonio Conte leaving Inter and Massimiliano Allegri about to return to Juventus. Plus, the situation at Tottenham, where Mauricio Pochettino looks like he's set for a return to the club after 18 months away and a slightly bumpy few months at Paris Saint-Germain. That is all to come tonight. You can get your text in at 53106. You can tweet us at Off the Ball. Delighted to say for the news round, joined this evening by Will O'Callaghan. Evening, Will.
Evening, Richie.
And also joining us, I guess, swapping seats today, although I've never been in Joe's home and he's never been in mine because he's not welcome. Joe Malloy joins us on the line. Evening, Joe.
Richie, get out of my seat.
I've got wipes underneath me, right, so that there's no residue left from my actual jeans on the seat. So everything will be clean, neat and proper. I'm not going to mess anything up, okay? It's going to be grand. Joe, you mentioned last night on the show that the Europa League final would be a referendum on Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's time in charge of the club. We hinted at the fact that the reaction to it, one way or the other, was going to be probably a bit on the extreme side. It turns out to have been the case. He's clearly not the man for the club, and he's clearly not the man to win them trophies, according to some online today. I don't know what you made of it last night. It seemed as if they were looking like for 45 minutes that they were going to walk away with this thing, and yeah, then not so much.
Yeah, big time. I mean, it's definitely bad, isn't it? He's on the back foot again, that's for sure. All the leverage he has and the credit in the bank he has, I think, well, he's taken a large withdrawal, and he's been through these cycles a few times. That's the kind of weird thing about the Solskjaer tenure. I mean, pre-Christmas, it was all good, and he's come back when he looked dead before, and, you know, he's had that kind of up and down roller coaster situation. Now, look, on the back of last night, the problem for him, whether it's fair or not, I don't know, but there's now a pretty strong case against him, and that can be built in the media. And if he gets off to a bad start next year, then the media will be on his case pretty quickly, asking tough questions, writing various articles. And that does influence fans, and that does build up a pressurized atmosphere at the club. And in many ways, you know, it's ridiculous that we all make these big judgments on the basis of one game. Like, one keeper scores, the other misses, we're having a different conversation, and it's, you know, great season, and look at the progress he's made. So, you know, and that's beyond his control. That's beyond any manager's control. Yes, he could have picked Dean Henderson, but frankly, I thought Henderson looked really poor in the few chances he got. The game against Liverpool in particular, Roy Keane described him as small that time he stayed on his line. And I thought that was a major jury's out moment for Dean Henderson. So a penalty shootout dictating all this is extreme. However, fact remains, he didn't win a final. He should have won. Villarreal are in seventh. Finished seventh in the league. United should be beating them. So the end of the season has been underwhelming. Yes, few too many games in too short a space of time. But even that, Rich, when you're explaining, as you know, you're losing. And Solskjaer now is doing a lot of explaining.
Well, it's that extra time performance, I guess, that will have many putting their backs up, and even the second half as well, whereby United looked like, for all the falling behind, looked like the better team, and looked like they were probably, for a decent chunk of that game, looking like they were going to go on and win it. And then it just sort of fell apart. In extra time in particular, there seemed to be no making a substitution for Solskjaer, and when they did, they came too late, and by that stage everybody was too leggy and the game was probably beyond turning. But it's an indictment of him that those changes didn't come sooner, and that's not the penalties, but that's what he's going to be judged on last night.
Yeah, I guess the real question around Solskjaer would be that, have you ever watched an extra time where two teams seemed happier to go the full 120 minutes and go to penalties? Like, Manchester United should really be above that. And Solskjaer needed to bring in some fresh legs during extra time. But you could see how long he waited and how many of his considerations were about getting penalty takers on towards the end of the game as penalties were approaching. So Juan Mata and Alex Telles both came on because they've been regular penalty takers. They were forced into the substitution around Twanzebe because of Baye's injury. But you kind of wonder, if you're going to wait until 3 to 4 minutes to go in extra time, why would you not try and bring off some of the jaded players a little bit earlier and try and go win the game? Particularly when Villarreal, once it got to extra time, were more than happy to just camp back and see out the minutes to get to the penalty shootout. They said afterwards they didn't practice penalties even this week, but they were very polished penalties, helped by the fact that David De Gea has now gone 35 penalties he's faced without saving a single one. It was 25 conceded in a row before the game last night. And another moment of indecision was that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer admitted, when he was sitting there with 2 minutes to go, he considered bringing on Dean Henderson at the time that he brought Telles and Mata on, because he knew about De Gea's poor penalty record, but decided against making that change. And one wonders if Solskjaer had made it, not to start Henderson, but to bring him in for the shootout. Like, David De Gea, lads, got nowhere near a single Villarreal penalty.
Yeah, we mentioned him, it's a massive jury's out moment for Solskjaer. I think the jury's returned on De Gea, and it probably is time to make a call on his future at United, Joe.
Yeah, it's amazing how the De Gea thing's gone, isn't it? Like, the most coveted goalkeeper in the world for a couple of years, and he's just gone off a cliff. I think you're right. I mean, look, that's a bad night for him. Jury's definitely returned on him. Like, I'm so interested to see how the Solskjaer thing goes. I thought in many ways he had done and was doing a pretty okay job. Like, he's handled a lot of off-the-pitch stuff really well. Man management seems to be good. Like, the accusation Damon Delaney would have made in the show numerous times, speaking to us over the years, is that, like, tactically, he's just not seeing it from United. He's just not seeing the same level of plan that you get when Man City are, you know, doing their thing, or when Liverpool are on the front foot. With United, like, they're still just a counter-attacking team. And that's a fair charge. At the same time, they are coming from such a lower base, and Solskjaer's got rid of a load of players. And, you know, definitely made progress. So I'm quite torn on it. I definitely felt like, yeah, things are going okay. I think last night will be a blow to him. It was kind of a lose-lose. That was the thing we said last night. If they had beaten Villarreal last night, it would have been, well, so what? You know, that's kind of why it was just a win it and you won't get much credit and just move on kind of a thing. Whereas losing it now, yeah, like all the things Will mentions about how he handled the big occasion last night. You know, you can definitely say this guy's a bridesmaid. This guy's not going to get it done with the likes of Klopp and Guardiola around. And that seems a bit harsh on the basis of one match, you know, at the same time. So it's tricky. I'm kind of fascinated to see now to what extent they back him over the summer with signings. Will they shell out for a centre half? Will they shell out for another player up front? Maybe another right-hand side attacker? Will they shell out for somebody to go in alongside McTominay, for instance? If they don't, and we pitch up in a similar fashion at the start of next season, then I would think they are having misgivings about Solskjaer.
They're in a weird holding pattern now when you consider that Ed Woodward is going to be there until the end of the calendar year. So they're going to go through this transfer window with him ostensibly still at the helm. So they're not going to make, you would imagine, any great managerial decisions until they have somebody replacing the executive vice chair's role. Or am I completely off base there, Joe?
I think they might, you know. I mean, he'll be bad news and he'll be trouble and he'll give them a headache and he'll ask for too much money and he'll go and probably win a big trophy. Antonio Conte being free, I think that gives them all pause for thought, you know. Like, he's just a serial winner. They're desperate for a serial winner now. I don't know what Will thinks. I don't think they'll make a change. Like, I absolutely don't. I think they'll 100% stick by Solskjaer for the time being. It's just the result, I think, Will, of last night is he's back into one of those on the back foot phases as opposed to when things were going okay. Like, suddenly he's under pressure again.
Yeah, well, there's some big names out there, isn't there? There's not only Conte, but there's a certain man called Zinedine Zidane who suddenly finds himself out of work this summer.
And potentially Pochettino comes available now. Like, it looks like Max Allegri is definitely going to take over at Juventus, so we're not going to see him in the Premier League next season. But it's not like there's not two or three very good managers that Manchester United would have considered at the time Solskjaer was coming in, where they could potentially go that direction. The only thing is, would it be very unfair to sack Solskjaer given that they finished second in the Premier League? I know there's been debate today that maybe that was a false position given the way that Chelsea started the season and given the way Liverpool went this year. But in black and white, Manchester United finished up in second place, which was their best finish in 4 years in the Premier League. And as a result, Solskjaer met most of the targets that he would have been expected to do. And like, even with the disappointment of going out of a pretty decent Champions League group, they still went all the way to the Europa League final. And he would point to the fact, as Joe said, if the goalkeepers missed the penalties in an opposite direction last night, Manchester United win the Europa League and it looks like a decent season.
The problem they have is the problem they've always had with Solskjaer. There is no CV to put any faith in when things are rocky. And that ultimately, you know, we're back to that now again, whereby, yes, it's incredibly harsh to sack him on the basis of a penalty shootout. Like, it's a nuts thing to do. It's scoreboard journalism at its worst. However, I can imagine them sitting around the board going, well, if we hire Conte, there's a pretty good guarantee he's going to turn out to be really good. With Solskjaer, there's still this jury's out feeling. Yes, things look decent, but it's always two steps forward, one step back kind of a thing. Like, that's been the fundamental problem with Solskjaer at every turn. When things have gone awry, there's no CV there where you can say, we can ride this out with confidence. So they're back into that. How much do we believe in this guy based on, I don't know, DNA, his man management, all that stuff again.
The De Gea thing I want to go back to as well, Will, because as you mentioned there, like, he didn't look like coming close to saving any of those penalties. But as we've seen, like, with managers in the past, whether it's Paul Cook at Sligo, whether it's Louis van Gaal with the Netherlands, there are things you can do. You can change your keeper, and it's not only change your goalkeeper. Like, remember Tim Krul's water bottle, whereby he had where every player usually takes a penalty and where they're going to go. You don't get a sense that David Gea has put in that kind of work. And in the year of our Lord 2021, there's really no excuse for not doing that.
No, and like, he looks very low in confidence at the moment too, even when you saw him going into the penalty shootout last night. And I know he tried to have a little bit of antics by almost walking up to the halfway line before the first penalty took place. But after that, like, you didn't get the impression that he was slowing down any of the penalties or making it difficult for them. Now, Villarreal's quality of penalties they took were really good, but you would have to question how many went to David De Gea's right-hand side, whether Villarreal had done some homework on him too, because every single time he got nowhere near them. I think there was only two that went down the left and one down the middle. So clearly they were aware of his weaknesses going into that penalty shootout. And had Solskjaer brought Dean Henderson in, who's got a better record of saving penalties, we could well be calling him an expert for doing that. Like, you'd have to wonder about other little bits of man management as well, lads. Like Donny van de Beek, who came in, a player who's played in the Champions League semi-final for Ajax, is still sitting on the bench during the Europa League final and seems to have got no luck in this season whatsoever. I appreciate that maybe Solskjaer wasn't the guy who was going out to bat to sign van de Beek last year, but remarkable to think a player of his quality who will probably start for the Netherlands at the European Championships this summer, he seems to have been entirely unable to work him into his team.
Yeah, I'm interested to get people's thoughts on this. Give us your text, 53106, if you want to get in contact. Never look like walking away with it, as like all season, they get a lucky goal to level and then nothing, their luck, and they have too much run out. Michael in Arklow says, love the show. Thank you, Michael. Lads, let's call a spade, second is a false position for United. As for De Gea, only for him, they will be scrapping around with the Villas and the Leeds, and as Neil Tracy pointed out outside, he did indeed have a list behind the goal as well, informing him where Villarreal were going to go to. And the other thing I wanted to touch on before we get to Will's news round as well was the statement from Naomi Osaka, the tennis pro last night, who said that she was stepping away from media duties at the upcoming French Open because of the mental health issues. She says, I've often felt that people have no regard for athletes' mental health, and this rings true whenever I see a press conference or partake in one. I've watched many clips of athletes, she goes on, breaking down after a loss in the press room, and I know you have as well. I believe that the whole situation is kicking a person while they're down, and I don't understand the reason behind it. She says press conferences essentially shouldn't be a requirement of competing in a tournament. Joe, I thought she had a point to all of this. I've watched some press conferences, particularly in tennis, down through the years, that have been desperately uncomfortable viewing experiences, whereby they're contracted to be there in front of the press and answer questions, and they just don't have an answer for what's gone on in the, you know, half hour to 5 hours that's gone on before. I don't know what you might of this one.
Yeah, I mean, not good for us boys. I mean, I totally see where she's coming from. I think if I could do a similar thing in her position, I probably would. I was trying to get a sense of the fines. I know Djokovic was fined $7,500 after not doing a press conference after he was disqualified from the US Open. Venus Williams has neglected press conference on a few occasions as well, been fined anywhere from between $3,000 to $5,000. I think the maximum you can get hit for is $20,000. I mean, two points jump to mind. They don't need the media anymore. Like, I guarantee you, her social media platform dwarfs those of the media she is speaking to. I want to let my actions do my talking. I want to talk in my terms. I've often thought press conferences pretty scary things, you know, like we're all full of shortcomings and hypocrisies, and anything could come at you in a press conference. I would think they are stressful for sure. Like even watching Drive to Survive, you see these very capable F1 team managers rehearsing answers en route to press conferences with the PR people and trying to not make a fool of themselves. Like a lot of added stress. And if she says, well, for mental health reasons, I'm not subjecting myself to that. I'm not having you pick holes in my confidence, because of course we're going to ask questions with a negative tilt. That's what unfortunately the media do. Why, you know, Rory McIlroy asked about, you know, sitting in a Rory McIlroy press conference, it's all about like, what's wrong with your game and when are you going to win again? I could see how you could walk out of that for the billionth time thinking, I don't need this crap at all. So I don't think she'll be the last. It'll be interesting to see to what extent the authorities really try and hit her now with fines and make, you know, because this is the line in the sand drawn. This is the war. So over to you, Roland Garros. What are you going to do? Are you really going to fine me 20 grand when I'm citing my mental health? I'm not sure that's a good look at all. Phil Mickelson did something pretty similar last week, actually. It was he's usually pretty open with the media, and the word from the course was his management were very strict on like three questions tops, you know, minimum. He's out of here, and because he wanted to be in a bubble and he wanted to put his performance first, and you know he was vindicated. So I find it hard to be critical. I think, you know, good on you in some ways. Like I said, not great for the media, but she's not going to be the last.
Yeah. We'll crack into the news round on Off the Ball on News Talk, which is with thanks to Gillette. We don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters. And a crucial summer will en route for Robbie Brady.
Yeah, actually, just before I tell you about Robbie Brady, Richie, just some breaking news that came in. Viewers on our social media platforms probably saw me looking down at my phone a couple of minutes ago. Ulster Rugby have just released a statement in the last few minutes to say their game against Scarlets in the Rainbow Cup this weekend is now off. It's as a result of four positive tests for COVID-19 in the Ulster squad, which were returned this afternoon. They say that the players are asymptomatic. They're now self-isolating at home in line with public health protocols, and they're awaiting a decision on what will happen with that fixture. 500 fans had been due to be in Kingspan Stadium, and they say that the supporters will now receive a full refund. Ulster also noting, with no available weekends remaining, it looks like the game won't be rescheduled. So as a result, it'll be a draw on a scoreboard of 0-0, and they reckon four match points go to the Scarlets, but they're waiting for Pro 14 Rugby to give them the official news on that.
Yeah, desperately disappointing news when you figure that there were 500 fans about to make their return to Kingspan Stadium this weekend. We'll keep our fingers crossed that that doesn't start to spread, I guess, across Ulster with the fans returning to stadiums across the weekend. But as you mentioned there, Robbie Brady looking for a new club.
Yeah, he says he loved every minute, lads, of his five seasons at Burnley. The Republic of Ireland international looking for a new club this summer after confirming that he will be leaving Turf Moor when his contract expires. Brady was the Claret's record signing when they paid £13 million for him to sign him from Norwich back in 2017. Burnley opted against offering the 29-year-old a new deal. Manager Sean Dyche says the Dubliner was incredibly unfortunate with injuries in recent seasons, which included that 11 months out in 2018 after his best year for Burnley. And then he struggled with injuries since. He's currently recovering from an Achilles tendon issue, and he'll stay with Burnley until he's recovered, and then he'll find a new club.
Yeah, he'll be down in the Championship, you'd imagine, Joe.
Yeah, I was just thinking there. I hadn't realised they let his contract run out, 29. I mean, the fact that there's no signing on fee, would a Premier League club throw him decent wage and say, take a chance on him? What's your sense of him? Like, he's such skill, obviously, in a beautiful left foot, and at times his set-piece delivery is really good. I think maybe Premier League managers might wonder about his ability to get around the pitch at the very top level. That might be the question mark against him, I think.
He's walking that tightrope where he needs more games, but then you're asking the question, does more games add to his injury profile? Like, is too much of a workload going to basically enter this cycle again whereby you can't get fit and then can't put a string of 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 matches together? It's a tricky proposition for him. I don't know if a Premier League team takes a punt on him, Will.
I don't know, yeah. I mean, he's probably going to convert, I would think, at this stage in his career, more towards a number 10 than a winger as well. And again, you look at the injury profile, I think probably upper end of the Championship. Maybe if one team is going to have a look at him, because Norwich may well have to fend off bids for some of the players as they come back up to the Premier League, maybe a route back to Norwich is his best way back into the Premier League, but perhaps he'll have to go a little bit lower than that.
Yeah, managerial merry-go-round turning as well, Will.
Yeah, and the interesting one is potentially Tottenham going back with Mauricio Pochettino again. He was sacked by Spurs, you remember, back in November of 2019. That was just 5 months after leading to the Champions League final. Pochettino is currently in charge of French club Paris Saint-Germain. They didn't have the best season, only ended up with the French Cup at the end. Reports this evening suggest, though, a deal for him to go back to North London is still some way off. Zinedine Zidane, meanwhile, has left Real Madrid for a second time. The French World Cup winner saw his side lose the La Liga title in the race against their local rivals Atletico last weekend. The 48-year-old did win three successive Champions League titles during his first spell in charge between 2016 and 2018, but it's the first time that Madrid have failed to win a trophy in a decade. Antonio Conte, meanwhile, is already being linked with a vacancy in the Spanish capital. He left Inter Milan this week after guiding them to a first Serie A title in 11 years. Juventus are apparently close to appointing Max Allegri as their head coach for a second spell. He would replace Andrea Pirlo, according to Sky in Italy. Allegri is expected to sign a contract with Juve in the next 24 hours.
Joe, it's something Richard. we touch on with Martin Lipton in the football show. Like, maybe the idea of a sabbatical for a manager, when you see Allegri going back to Juventus, when you see Pochettino at least considering going back to Spurs, maybe taking 6 months, cooling off, letting some of the deadwood be cleared out on your behalf and then going back in, looks like it could be a more viable option going forward.
I do remember hearing about Pep Guardiola's sabbatical, living, you know, 6 months in New York and hanging out with, was it Garry Kasparov or someone? And yeah, just it just sounded like, God, I'd love to take a 6 month sabbatical or a year sabbatical. Sadly, Richie, that's unlikely to happen for us, I would think. Am I missing something here? This is insane on Pochettino's part, like insanity. Or has he got the sack at PSG and I've just missed this? How is he even considering going back to Spurs from PSG? He should be, you know, getting onto the PSG owners, apologising profusely for what's happened and saying, give me one more chance. Like, what is he even doing thinking about leaving PSG to go back to Spurs?
I don't think he likes the politics there. I've seen that word a lot today. I think it's a case of where he's had to deal with Leonardo and the owners, Nasser Al-Khelaifi, and Leonardo is an incredibly powerful figure at that company, or that, well, yeah. I guess, and that club, but just doesn't want to deal with the hassle.
I get it. Well, I mean, I can only guess at it. I try and tough it out. I try and find a way. I mean, to have Mbappe and Neymar and these players at your disposal to be making a name for yourself in the Champions League, I mean, are the politics of Daniel Levy and Spurs all that much more fun, and maybe a Harry Kane-less Spurs? This is it, Poch. You know, this is like one of the biggest clubs in Europe. This is your chance. Just try for another year to make it work. Now, maybe in due course we'll find out it is a basket case. But like, they reached Champions League final last year under Tuchel. I don't know. I just find this really strange situation. I don't understand it. Like, Poch, you'll have to come out and explain this one. I don't get it.
Will, before we wrap up, I just want to get good news, I guess, from the COVID world on that Kilkenny-Wexford game.
Yeah, it looks like it's going to go ahead this Sunday now. It's after the Wexford panel, who all went through COVID-19 testing earlier this week, got negative results back. So that means all the players can return to training as of tonight for Davy Fitzgerald's side. And the original fixture from last weekend, which was postponed on Sunday, has been provisionally refixed by the GAA for this coming Sunday afternoon. But they're just waiting at the moment now for the official green light from the HSE, which is expected to come.
And Andrew Omobamadeli as well, talking about his call-up to the Republic of Ireland squad.
Yeah, he's been speaking to us. He says he's extremely proud to receive a call-up to the senior squad. The young Norwich defender this week named in Stephen Kenny's 27-man group for next month's friendlies against Hungary and Andorra. He spoke to OTBAM at the launch of the Intersport Elvries FAI Summer Schools programme, and the Leixlip native recalled the moment that he found out he'd been included in the squad.
I was at the gym and I came back and I was kind of jumping up and around the place. A couple of tears here and there, but she won't want me saying anything about that. It was a great moment, and there's a couple of my neighbours and stuff with the little kids dropped in a few notes and stuff saying congratulations. So it's a great time for me and my family and Leixlip as a community as well, because we're a tight-knit community, and I'm sure for them seeing someone playing in the senior team that played for Leixlip United is great as well. So it's a great time for Leixlip.
Do you think your mother knew this was going to happen, that you were going to become an Ireland senior?
I don't think you'd say she knew, but I think she was kind of hoping since day one, really. That's what she's always talking to me about. Imagine playing in the seniors, World Cups in years to come, please God, stuff like that. But yeah, she's my mum, and every mum has high expectations for the kids. So.
That's lovely stuff. You never peg him as 18. Joe Malloy, thanks so much for joining us this evening, and Will as well. That is it for the news round. We will have John Giles talking the Europa League final on the way next.
The News Round on Off the Ball.
With Gillette, we don't just play the game, we change it. Gillette, made of what matters.